Stories Online.
When you sign up to be an EPP, extra podcast person to Real Ghost Stories Online, you'll have access to the best ghost stories we've ever told.
The oven doors started slamming open and closed. And in places like this, oven doors take up entire walls.
Never before had I seen such clear evidence of something non-human being in a room with me.
Because it felt like somebody was here. You know, you see I Did It written in paint, where you just paint it.
These are stories only EPP members have access to.
I don't know why, but I just wonder if that scream isn't a family member that was there to claim their loved one.
There was like something standing there right in the threshold of the doorway, and I was paralyzed. I couldn't breathe.
It's only $5 a month when you sign up at realghoststoriesonline.com by clicking Become an EPP.
There was an old lady standing at the foot of the bed, and she said she could see details and everything. You know, it just looked like an old lady standing at the foot of the bed.
You'll get access to the best ghost stories and exclusive video content we've ever created.
I have no doubt in my mind that it was completely supernatural.
But it felt like it was in my head. Like, it didn't feel like I was hearing it. It felt like it was in my head.
Become an EPP now and help keep our show on the air. At realghoststoriesonline.com, click Become an EPP.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown, and quite possibly, the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That indeed it is. The phone number 855-853-4802 to share your real ghost stories with us here at Real Ghost Stories Online, where, yes, indeed, the show does not end with Halloween. We can guarantee that.
It goes on and on and on.
I could see that, you know, some folks, checking out the podcast today is kind of going, is it done after Halloween? If they're new to the show, and we talk about it a lot, but, you know, unless you're, you know, sitting and listening to every single word we say, I could see, you know, being a little curious about that. But no, this thing goes on well after. Now it's the month of turkey ghosts, so we're going to be sharing a lot of stories of haunted Boston markets.
Okay.
It's... you can believe the amount of Boston Market stories we get in.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of ghost pigs, hams. That's more towards Christmas and Easter.
Okay.
But this time of year, it's a lot of what is it called when the turkey gobbling? Right.
Gobble.
Can you do a good?
No,
gobble?
I can't.
There used to be a radio station.
That sounds like a pigeon.
I know. You're right.
Okay, that's.
We'll,
nice.
We'll start doing. Well. Pigeon this year. I can't do a good gobble, but there used to be a station in my hometown where when you called in, when you heard the turkey call, the sound of the turkey, you were like the 10th caller, and if you could do a good turkey sound effect, you won a turkey from like the Piggly Wiggly or something. and I swear to God, this was like a thing every single year in my house. My parents would be sitting there listening to the radio. And I'd be like, it's in the other room and not paying attention to what's going on. And before you know it, there's mom on the phone making turkey calls.
That's funny.
And I wasn't quite sure what was like, oh, it's the radio contest, you know, or else then you hear dad, you know, down in his office and he's not worried. He's making turkey calls. And,
did they ever win one?
I think we did. I mean, they were pretty big on winning radio contests.
Yeah.
We won a lot of...
was before you were in radio, so it was all fair.
Way before, yeah. In fact, that was one of her biggest hang-ups about me when I got into radio, was that she couldn't win the contest. She was like... And after I left, she was very happy. She could start playing the contests again. So, there you go. Except by that point, a lot of people didn't work at the radio stations anymore to do contests. But there you go. Turkey calls it was. Spooky. 855-853-4802 is our phone number. Let's go to our first caller of the day. It's Rebecca. Hi, let's hear your story.
Hi, Brewskis. My name's Rebecca, and I am speaking to you and your listeners today from West Yorkshire in England. So what I'm about to relate to you sounds, to start with, like your average haunted house story. But actually, what I really want to speak about is one very strange experience that happened near the end of my time there, which just doesn't seem to fit with the house and everything that was going on. And I don't even know for certain it was paranormal, but one thing I definitely know is that it was totally unexplainable. And it's left me and all my neighbours baffled forever, and nobody has ever been able to explain it. So I'd be interested to hear your thoughts. Okay, so I bought my first house aged 18 in 2001, believe it or not. That was just before the house prices went through the roof, and I was able to buy this lovely little cottage, two bedroom, bathroom upstairs, and a kitchenette and small living room and a cellar to the bottom. I was able to buy that for £27,500, which these days is your average deposit, but that was the entire cost of the house. The locality it was in was steeped in murderous history and local legend, and the cottage was actually an old rhubarb farm on a hillside cul-de-sac, and that means it's a dead end at the top, with only railway tracks on the opposite side of the small thin road that my house sat partially sunken upon. It was actually where the living room was, which was at the side where the road was, the cul-de-sac road. It was so sunken that we only had one tiny little window, the sort of window you'd have in the bathroom, so you couldn't see through it. And that was right up at the top of the of the wall near the ceiling. And that was at foot level of the street, so it was quite a steep hill. And every time a car went up or down it, the vibrations would cause the door knocker to knock, and you'd be able to see the lights in the window, and it was just very clear when someone was going past. And this was a very quiet street. The line of terraces that I was in the middle of, I don't know, maybe there's 100 houses, each with a car each, but it was pretty, you know, it wasn't any form of main road situation. At the other side, there was the gardens and then a big field. And then at the bottom was another road that was called Lady Anne Road, named after Lady Anne, who was murdered just at the end of our street. And Howley Hall ruins was within our sights. You could see the ruins, and that's a very infamous haunted place that you'll find in lots of Yorkshire paranormal books. So. When I first moved in, there was a very warm presence in that house immediately. And, you know, I've lived in houses that had very unwelcoming presences, a lot of houses that have had no presences at all. But this one, you know, it just felt almost edible. It was so thick, like this sort of big hug when you walked in. And it didn't take me long into living there to come to the conclusion that there was at least one child, a spirit of a child within the house. And this was later confirmed when a medium visited. So I'd hear a sweet girl's voice on the landing. I'd hear movement downstairs to find I was still alone. I'd have very strange dreams that are very memorable about the house. Pictures and ornaments would turn around. I'd hear childlike breathing next to my bed. Pictures would hit my ex when he was living there for a short time when he was arguing with me, and he was even dragged down the bed. They didn't like him, but he wasn't that nice to me. So, and items would whiz around scaring visitors out onto the street. Towels would be physically yanked off the rails in front of guests. We had a sudden plague of moths one night when someone said they didn't like moths. An all-encompassing smell of lavender the next. Items would be constantly moved around. The alarm was always being tripped. But I wasn't too scared because I felt it was a cheeky, benevolent presence that was almost protective of me. And I never felt worried about living there. However, one night something happened that didn't quite fit, and it left me, my ex, boyfriend at the time, and the neighbours just baffled. So me and my ex were playing this psychic game in the front room called the Oracle, which I still got to this day, and it's more like the tarots and the Ouija board, so it's not actually contacting anything. And I remember I just asked the question, what does his mother think of me? And his mother had actually passed away when he was a child, when we heard this crash so loud from the outside that we thought a train had derailed. Now, my cottage, being the original cottage, opposite it had this sort of like tunnel, small, short tunnel, where you could see the train lines. So I thought it had come off and gone through the tunnel and gone onto the embankment. So by the time we changed out of our pyjamas really quickly and headed outside, many neighbours were already out there on the cul-de-sac, and our wheelie bins, which are here in Calderdale, in Kirklees, where I used to live, really big black plastic bins. So you'd have a black one and a green one. Your green was your recycling, your black was just anything that couldn't be recycled. And, you know, they're pretty tall. They're probably the size of a 12-year-old, you know, and, you know, they were pretty heavy. And they'd all mine, both of them, and the neighbours there too as well, who they were all four of them next to each other, opposite our houses, next to the embankment. They were crushed into little balls from all angles, like some massive hand had just reached down and just crushed them. We hadn't heard or seen a vehicle pass, and like I say, that was very obvious on that old quiet cul-de-sac. And that night in particular, we had no TV on, no music on. We were playing this game, so we were, you know, in the front room concentrating. And anyway, a couple of the bins were out in the middle of the road. So whatever, if it had been a vehicle, it wouldn't have been able to pass the bins because they were blocking the only way out. And at the other end, it's a dead end. And nobody had heard anything. They all thought a train had come off the tracks, and nobody could explain what happened to our bins. And one of them had the lid popped off, so it was like as if it had been squeezed again from both sides. And yeah, it was just a really, really strange experience. I sold up and moved out shortly after splitting up with my partner. And I don't know, I don't think that had anything to do with what was happening in the house, but I'd be really interested to hear your thoughts and whether you think that was paranormal or what. I mean, to me, it's one of the few things that I don't think, oh, I bet this is, you know, that girl, or, you know, something that I feel I can explain due to my beliefs and experiences. This one, I still just think about it and think, what the hell crushed our bins? So anyway, that's my story. Thank you for listening, and hope you are well. Cheers. Bye.
So I'm always a bit intrigued when you have like ghost, you know, objects or vehicles or things of that nature.
Well, I don't even know if it was that, because there was some kind of force that took out those trash bins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, and like she said, if it was some kind of car, they would have seen it because of the way the lights are and everything.
Yeah.
And it's a cul-de-sac, so it wasn't just running down a, you know.
It's just the assumption was it was a train, but then it probably wasn't. It was something that was making noise.
But the timing was kind of odd, too, you know, because she had just mentioned what would her boyfriend's mother think of her.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have that happen. It's like, but I don't know.
Maybe she got her answer.
Yeah.
Maybe
that's why it was her ex now.
That's all it was. Thank you for the story. 855-853-4802 is our number. Hi, let's hear your story.
Hello, Tony and Jenny. This is Quetzal from North Texas. I'm stuck in traffic right now, so I thought I would take advantage of the time to give you a short story. This is a story that is in my family. It didn't happen to me. It happened to one of my favorite aunts when she was a young newly married person. I think she was in her teens, in her late teens. She and her husband had this thing they liked to do. I don't know how it came about, but they liked to go to very old cemeteries to see where they could find the oldest headstone, or the, you know, with the most the oldest dates. And they would do these I don't know, stenciling. They would get paper and rubbing, oh, they're called rubbings, I think that's what they're called, of the headstones with the dates. So This happened in South Texas near a town called Palacios, Texas, where my family is from. And I'm not sure. She's never mentioned exactly which cemetery it was. She's since passed away. May she rest in peace. But this is a story she would tell us when we were younger, and even as adults, you know, she would share this story with us because it was one of our favorites. We thought it was so creepy. So anyway, she told us they were on a trip to see one of these old cemeteries and search for the oldest headstone, she and her husband. So they were walking through the cemetery. It was during the day. They weren't brave enough, I don't think, to try to do this at night. but they were walking around searching for through the headstones to see what they could find. And eventually, as the day went on, my aunt got a little tired, and she decided she wanted to go ahead and just go back to the car and wait for her husband because he said he wasn't ready to leave yet. So she told him, I'm going to the car and I'll wait for you to get done because I'm tired. So she went back to the car, and while she was walking back to the car, she went through the low fence that was around the cemetery. It wasn't high. It was kind of like waist high, I guess. And she was almost to the car when she heard this blood-curdling, non-human scream. It was very loud, very, very hair-raising. It scared her half to death. You know, she heard that scream. She started to run. She started heading for that car at full speed. And then she heard her husband's scream. So she got into the car really fast. She locked all the doors. She was terrified. She didn't have the keys. Her husband had the keys. So she said she didn't care. She would have driven away if she could, even without her husband. But she was stuck. So she sat in the car shaking in fear because that scream was just so terrifying. And as she watched, as her husband came running in terror, face completely white. This is a brown man, you know, a Hispanic man. So he was in stark terror, with white faced and running as fast as he possibly could. And she said, oh no, that fence is right there. And he wasn't anywhere near the door, you know, the gate that opened. So she thought, what is he going to do? So she watched and could not believe that he actually flew over that fence. He was so scared and running so fast. He just jumped over that fence and in a leap. And this is a tall guy, so I wouldn't imagine it would have been that difficult for him. So he gets to the car and starts banging on the doors and the windows, begging my aunt to open the doors. She was still so frightened that she kind of froze for a few seconds before she finally unstuck herself and unlocked the doors so that he could get in or unlock the door. He gets in the car, turns it on, and they just peel out of there. It's just in terror, just completely scared. When he finally calmed down enough to talk, she asked him what happened because she told him that she heard a scream and then she heard him scream. And he explained to her that as he was walking through the cemetery, that he happened to step on a grave. And as he stepped on that grave, his foot sank in all the way to his thigh through the ground into the, you know, until his foot hit something hard, like I guess what would be a coffin. And when his foot touched the hard surface, that is when that horrible, horrible, scary scream came out. And that's when he screamed. And he pulled with all of his strength to pull his leg out of that ground. And that's when he started running toward the car. So he said that the grave was not new. It wasn't a newly dug grave. The ground everywhere else was hard. I mean, it wasn't like it had just rained. There was no reason for his leg to sink into that ground. So they were just completely horrified. And from then on, they decided they were never going to go to any cemetery for this purpose ever again. They were so scared. So this is kind of a fun family story that has been shared over the years, ever since it happened. Well, I guess a few years after it happened. I don't know if my aunt shared this with my mom or my grandmother or anyone else before us, since we weren't around during that time. But when we were little, she would tell us, never, if we went to the cemetery where our family members are buried, she would always warn us not to step on the graves, because it was a form of disrespect to do that, and you never know what will happen. So I hope you like the story, and I have more that I will be sharing in the near future. Have a wonderful day.
I'm totally going to use a cautionary tale with our children and say it happened to me.
You are?
When we're going to a graveyard. Because I remember when I was a kid, it was always the same deal. Like, you don't step on the graves.
Yeah. It's
disrespectful.
Right.
I get that. But a lot of times kids never heed those warnings.
Mm-hmm.
They just do it. They're kids. There's a cautionary tale or story or experience. So you share that, I think that might sink in more than just don't do it.
Sink in, no pun intended.
Exactly. Exactly.
Wow.
What ran through my mind on it was, you know, we heard the scream when his foot sunk down. I mean, I know she went on to say that it didn't rain, it wasn't a new grave, it wasn't this, it wasn't that. My only thought, you know, if you're going to try and come up with anything non-paranormal, is did someone get buried there, like, alive, like, recently, and then they just kind of put the dirt right back, so mm-hmm. it looked pretty, you know, non-fresh? I don't know. I mean, there's ways, I guess, of doing that, if you wanted to be really sneaky about it.
I guess so. And at night, it'd kind of be hard to tell, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, my only thought is that he stepped on someone who was, you know, essentially being murdered and didn't realize it. And then, of course, got freaked out thinking it was a ghost. And, you know, that's what it was left as.
Well,
I don't know. I mean,
I kind of thought that when I first heard the story, because when it sank down up to his thigh and he reached the coffin, he felt the hard coffin.
Yeah.
Coffins are deeper than that.
Yeah, there. You would be like, you'd be down to your, depending how tall you are, but, you know, probably your head somewhere.
Yeah.
In that vicinity, that's, you know, 6-7 feet down.
Right.
Usually.
Right.
So I mean,
I believe something like this happened. It's just like, oh my gosh, did they stumble upon somebody being buried alive? Which I guess, if you're going to bury a body, a cemetery.
I guess that's a in plain sight, but not a place that a lot of people are going to be looking. I guess place to go.
Yeah.
You know, depending on how old the cemetery is, how active it is,
sure,
or whatnot. But I guess it could fit in.
Well, you wouldn't question a coffin size plot there, and you know, a lot of times they don't have headstones until later on.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's, I mean, it, depending on the grave, I mean, sometimes, you know, and I just know this from wandering through cemeteries through most of my youth, there was a lot of times you got a fresh dead, if you will, one that just got buried. That's why that the right term to use.
That's horrible.
A newly buried, recently deceased person.
A fresh dead. God.
Well, I don't know. Anyway, I'm speaking more of the plot than the person.
Okay.
A plot there where somebody has been buried, or something has been buried, and sometimes that can look pretty fresh for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that those are always like, oh, you know, next month you got grass growing. I remember several plots where it looked like it been, you know, had happened last week, mm-hmm. and it had happened several years back where they actually had the burial. I don't know why. Some of them grow over right away. And you got grass, and it looks like it's been there for 20 years, and it's been there 5 weeks.
Sure.
I guess it just kind of depends on the soil. if you will, and how much sunlight it's getting. All that sure plays in mm-hmm. as to how it's going to look, but I don't know. I mean, it's that's a tough one.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yuck.
I don't think he stood on the coffin.
No.
I think there was something else he was putting his feet on. 855-853-4802 is our number. Let's go to Danny in Washington. Hi.
Hi, Brewskies. My name is Danny. I'm calling you from rainy Washington State. And I love your show. I've been listening to it for a while now. And I've been meaning to call in because I have so many stories I'd like to share, but unfortunately, I don't have that much time in my day. So this is the one free time I have where I can call in and share with you one of my stories. This is the very first paranormal experience I ever remember having, and it is with the ghost who is in my mother's house. So to preface this story, I am in Washington State now, but I actually grew up in a small town in Wisconsin. And the house that I grew up in, my mother's house, is maybe 3 or 4 blocks away from a cemetery. So our neighborhood is very active. A lot of houses have experienced paranormal activity, and the house I grew up in, my mother's house, is no exception. So at the time of this story, I'm sorry, I should probably add, I totally forgot. My mom's house was built in the late 1800s, around 1890, and at one point there was a family living there, and the father and husband of that family was named John Jortland. And I'm assuming that Mr. Jortland was a very kind person in his life, because he's always been a very kind presence in our house, very welcome presence in our house in his afterlife. He passed away in what is now my mother's office. He died of a heart attack. And at the time of the story, my mother's office was actually her bedroom. So I must have been about 7 or 8. We had already had experiences with Mr. Jortland, which allowed us to attribute it to him. And it was at night. Like I said, I was about 7. And my mom was in her bedroom, and her room had these 2 large double doors that led into the room that I shared with my 2 older sisters, and then my 2 older brothers were just down the hall. On this particular night, I was laying in the bottom bunk of my bed, and I was on my side facing the wall opposite of the double doors leading into my mother's room, which were closed at that time. I was really uncomfortable. I couldn't get to sleep, so I decided to roll over to try to get into a more comfortable position so I could get some sleep. And as I'm rolling over to face the double doors to my mom's room, I, for whatever reason, decided to open my eyes. And as I did, I looked directly into the corner, the far right corner of my bedroom, where I saw this perfectly round white mist hovering about 6 feet off of the floor. And at first I was just mildly curious as to what it was, but as I'm watching it, it begins forming a head, and then it forms a neck and shoulders and arms and a torso. And I realize what's happening, and I was terrified. I remember very distinctly my breath catching in my throat. I was trying to scream. I was so scared, and then all of a sudden, it just hit me. It's just Mr. Jortland. It's just Mr. Jortland standing in the corner of the room, coming in to check on us to make sure we're all right, and that's all it was. And I laid down, I closed my eyes, and I went back to sleep. There was no danger. He was never, never dangerous. Another story, another Mr. Jortland story I love, was a few years after that. I was probably 11 or 12, and at this time I was sharing the same room with just one of my sisters. And we were listening to a radio station, some pop station, and we're listening to the radio, and all of a sudden it shoots over to a big band station. And we're confused and kind of like, what the hell? So we switch it back over to our station, and we get a few seconds of music, and then once again it goes right back to the big band station. So we did this little dance back and forth, switching to our station and then going back to the big band and back and forth, and finally we just said, Mr. Jortland, knock it off. We want to listen to our music. And we flipped it back to our station, and then that's where it stayed. Like I said, Mr. Jortland's always been a very welcome presence in our house. As I mentioned, he passed away in my mom's room, but he also is actually buried in the cemetery down the street from our house. So we'll go visit his gravesite and bring him flowers. And we've always coexisted together for as long as I can remember. I actually have more stories of him saving the lives of two of my older siblings, but those were a little bit before my time. They're more my mother's stories than mine. But when I get a chance, I'll call in and tell you those ones. It's not really a scary story, obviously, but a paranormal story nonetheless. So you guys have a great rest of your day and keep up the good work. Bye-bye.
It doesn't have to be scary to be a good paranormal story.
No.
But I do wonder sometimes, do ghosts look kindly upon people who come and visit their graves?
I would think so, if they're there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what I've wondered for a long time. I mean, obviously, we do get stories of ghosts in cemeteries, but I think we could actually get more stories of ghosts relating to bunk beds than we do in a cemetery.
Yeah, we do.
So I always have wondered, are cemeteries one of the most haunted places or one of the least most haunted places?
I don't know.
Because it's a place where certainly there's a lot of energy, mm-hmm. you know, when you make that argument of, you know, just emotions and people with sadness going through there. But it's also a place where for the most part, most people, I'm not one of them, don't spend a tremendous amount of time in them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, oh, this is a part of your daily routine or part of your normal life.
Sure.
In a lot of, most cases, I would say.
I can't say that if I were a ghost, I'd want to hang around looking at my headstone.
No, I look at other people's headstones.
I'd get bored with that. I think I'd want to go do something else outside the cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think I'd stick around.
I would probably wander cemeteries. I'd be like one of the few ghosts in the cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
But I would get so much joy out of it because people are going there and they're almost thinking they're going to be haunted
mm-hmm.
because they're in a cemetery. And that's, I would just make the experience that much better for them.
Okay.
I would do all sorts of things. You know, I'm just kind of picturing, you know, a cemetery with a lot of the trees and, you know, you have squirrels and the nuts fall this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
They fall or the squirrels throw them at you.
Or the acorns.
The acorns. I would do that. I would be throwing the nuts or dropping them on the people from the tree. And then they look up trying to find the squirrel and there's no squirrel. And then suddenly the nuts just start popping off the ground
uh-huh.
at the people too. Now that would be exciting.
Like popcorn.
And they're like, it's a ghost squirrel. No, it's just me.
Oh,
just
wow.
Just me completely screwing with you. So just forewarning to anyone. So there you go. Someday.
Nobody's going to come visit you.
It'll be like it'll be on Ripley's. Like there's a cemetery where Tony Bruschi is buried and the nuts fly off the ground at you.
No.
It would be very exciting. Let's go to Paul. Hi. Let's hear your story.
Hey, guys. My name is Paul. I'm the first time. Well, I discovered your channel like 2 days ago, so I've been listening to it like nonstop ever since. Love what I'm hearing. I think you guys are great. Love all the stories I'm hearing. And I like that you guys are kind of like non-judgmental about anybody's story and kind of just taking it all in and actually talking about it in a, you know, positive way and like real life discussions to try to understand what's going on. With that being said, I have a story for you guys. I'll give you a little bit of background on it. Hopefully it's not a little long and hopefully I don't want to ramble, but just to give a little bit of background, we're Asian, we're from Southeast Asia. I was born here, but my parents are from Southeast Asia. Came in 83, I'm 31 years old, born in 1985. Basically, in Southeast Asian culture, and this may be one of most Asian cultures actually, there is a saying that if you are drunk or intoxicated in some type of way, whether it's alcohol or drugs, you know, spirits can enter your body more easily. Like you could easily be possessed, I guess they would say. With that being said, my father died on September 27th, 1992. We just, you know, had his anniversary, his death anniversary, 23rd death anniversary, a couple weeks ago. I remember afterwards, me and my older sister went to go eat afterwards, and we started talking about my dad, and she brought up one night that happened about a year after he died and asked me if I remembered it. At first, I didn't remember it, but once she started bringing it up, I was like, I remember it kind of like as clear as day. So I kind of think it was sort of like a repressed memory. With that being said, my dad died, you know, in 1992. My mom remarried about a year later to my stepdad. And in our community, you know, we're Asian American, Southeast Asian American, Cambodian to be specific. Where we live at, it's the community, you know, everybody pretty much knows each other. So everybody in the community knew my father. Everybody in the community knew my stepdad. So, you know, them getting remarried after a year. Some say it might be too soon, but, you know, it wasn't really that big of a deal, not to me and my sister either. Now, the story I'm going to tell you guys is this happened when I was 9 years old. This happened in 93. Because I remember I was still sleeping with her in her room. You know, I didn't probably start sleeping by myself until I was about 10. And I remember one night, you know, me and my sister were talking about it. I do remember one night. My mom and dad just came back from a wedding, or my mom and stepdad came back from a wedding, one of their friends' weddings. Late at night, we were already in bed by at that point. I remember, you know, we were watching TV, we all just fell asleep. I don't know what time it was, but we just remember waking up and my stepdad was banging on our door. And we were just like, you know, wondering why he was banging on our door. We just kind of ignored it. My mom and my stepdad, they never really argued. At that point, either, and this is like they were like arguing, and he was banging on my door. We were kind of groggy waking up. Me and my sister, we didn't know what was going on. We were scared, not scared of anything ghostly, just mostly like, you know, what's going on? You know, why is he banging on our door? So my sister, you know, she was brave about it. She went to go open the door. As soon as she opened the door, you know, my stepdad, you know, he just came into the room, started hugging us. Just saying that he misses us and you know, like he was just like he was crying the whole time, and he had his eyes closed, and then like he just, you know, hugging us and saying that he missed us, and you know, we were just confused because we were just like, okay, we didn't know what was going on. My mom came in there and she would just start slapping him in his face, and she was just like saying, you know, in our language, like, you know, we don't want you here, you know, go home, go away, like, what are you doing here, and we, you know, me and my sister, we just looked at each other like, I don't know what the hell is going on, you know, we just don't know what the hell is going on, you know, we're just like, we don't know what's going on, he's, you know, we're like, he's drunk, you know, he must be drunk. So with that being said, you know, my mom finally got out of the room, and we tried to just go back to sleep or ignore it, but we still kind of heard the commotion going on, and then, you know, we were already up at that point. I got up, got out the room, went outside to the hallway, and then, you know, all the lights are on. They're still, my mom and him are still arguing. And then I see my stepdad try to call my aunt. He tried to call her, pick up the phone and call my aunt, which was my real dad's little sister. And my mom just snatched the phone from him, was like, what are you doing? You know, it's late at night. And then the whole time, he's just crying there, saying that he misses us. You know, he wish he was here. He's sorry. You know, it was just really, really confusing the whole night. And me being 9 years old, I just didn't know what was going on. I was like, you know, whatever, F it. I'm going to go back to sleep. I don't know what's going on. You know, the next day, after, all that kind of went on for like another hour or so, and then it finally quieted down. Afterwards, you know, we woke up, you know, came down for breakfast or whatnot. You know, my stepdad, he looked like, you know, he looked terrible. Like, he looked like he had a rough night, which he obviously did. And then I didn't say anything to him. Me and my sister just kind of look at him like, you know, kind of funny, like, but he was just like kind of zoned out, like he needed some coffee, or like he was just like kind of like he got off of a hangover. He went up to go take a shower. My mom came down. She was like, don't say anything about what happened last night to your stepdad. I was like, okay. And I didn't think nothing of it. And then from that point on, I think I must have forgot about it, because I never thought about it again from that point. Now, when I talked about my sister, she told me that, I don't know if you remember that night, but my sister, you know, I was 9, she was 12 years old. So, you know, she's a little bit more older than me, more mature, knows what's kind of going on. She told me that her and my mom talked about it. Apparently, my real dad possessed my stepdad because he was drunk. And that was my real dad that was, you know, doing all that. And, you know, like, I was like, whoa. Like, that memory stuck with, you know, like, I never remembered it, but now that I remembered it, it was like, everything's kind of, now that I remember what he said and all the things we were doing, it kind of clicked for me, like, whoa, like, did that really happen? You know, like, I just, you know, and then, like, my sister remembers it more vividly than I do, but now that, you know, I kind of, thinking about it more and more, it's like, I don't know if that really happened or not, but my sister told me that a couple of days afterwards, my mom called some monks to come over and come bless our house. You know, we're Buddhist, and, you know, like, that, a lot of that stuff is in a part of our culture. And, you know, I never had any other instances with that, anything like that happening with my stepdad. My sister told me that afterwards, though, maybe like a week later, my stepdad asked my sister to take, you know, to go to my dad's grave with him. And my sister told me that he brought some flowers, went to dad's grave, and, you know, he went there by himself. My sister stayed in the car, but he stayed there for about like 3 minutes, and my sister could tell like he was like probably talking to my dad's gravesite. So I don't know if my stepdad was aware of that happening to him or what, or he just got a feeling, but I don't know. I just thought this whole situation was pretty wild to be when it happened. And, you know, now that I thought about that, this might have, like, you know, my sister, my mom, and me, like, we obviously never talked about it, because I totally forgot about it until my sister brought it up to me. And now that I remember everything, I'm just like, you know, I don't, if that's what really happened, like, you know, we think that's what happened, then, you know, I don't know how you guys feel about possessions, but, you know, that's kind of the situation for that. And I don't know if that's something that, you know, we need to be worried about in the future, or is that something that was kind of a one-time thing. But like I said, you know, ever from that night on, you know, we never had anything going on. You know, it's been 23 years now. You know, love my stepdad. You know, he always treated me well, you know, never, like, I never had an issue with him. So, and I love my father too, my real dad. And you know, I guess I want to say, if I kind of knew that was him during that time, I think I would have, you know, I might have said a couple more things instead of just kind of, you know, like, just being dumbfounded about everything. But, you know, that's pretty much my story, guys. And, you know, I'm hearing you guys, and I love what I'm hearing. I'm going to sign up for the payment thing, because I love hearing you guys' story. And, you know, hope to hear more good things from you guys. Thanks, guys. Take care.
I know we've talked about it before, but I don't think we've ever really come to a true guess on whether or not people ghosts can possess people.
I think it's possible.
I think this is a very good example of a case where it can make you change your mind if you think no.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's not always necessarily, you know, possession in the sense of you're going to need an exorcist to get this out of you.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's sometimes it's using the person as just like the conduit or the speaker or whatever to relay the message, more so than the, you know, the power of Christ compels you.
Which is what you say every time I sneeze.
Hey, it's better than bless you.
Okay.
Just in case, it's a preventative measure.
Yeah. Thank you.
It's really fun when we're at a restaurant or something, and I start saying that.
Like, it's so weird.
People look around like, what's going on? Especially when I grab the crucifix out of my my man bag. And
Which you don't carry.
Make it like the Exorcist. I carry this leather satchel around, and it has
holy
water and
the family purse.
And a cross. And all sorts of other utilities that I need in there to perform an exorcism at any given moment. Most of the time, it's just the common cold or allergies. But hey, you can't be too safe, you know?
No.
It's just trying to think. All sorts of fun medication names you could kind of play on with that. But I'll stop. I think it's possible. I think that's probably all that was here. And I don't blame him for not getting more into it and saying more, like you said, he wishes he would have, you know, retrospectively. But in that moment, how the hell do you know what's going on?
There's no warning, and it's random in the middle of the night. You're half asleep.
I think it'd just be helpful if the dead, when they're possessing step parents, to when you're doing that, let your children know who's speaking.
Yeah.
Just, hey, by the way, this isn't your stepdad. This is actually your dead real dad. I'm using his body for a couple minutes. I'm going to be out of here soon. But just, you know, very nonchalantly.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that will make the situation even easier to deal with.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But why is it that ghosts forget those simple things sometimes?
Maybe they don't have time. Maybe it's just a matter of, I only have time to say this. This is all I'm going to say.
It's like, I can see that. You know, it's almost like if... When you're a parent and you have a child that's about to get into something that could harm them or hurt them, You don't have time to explain why this is a bad idea.
Yeah.
It's just blah, 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 stop immediately. And you say what you need to say to get the message across.
Sure.
With least amount of resistance or questioning. And then you can ask questions later. If you want, but I'm not going to give you an explanation at this moment. I'm just going to tell you what you need to do immediately. And that's probably the same sort of thing.
I always think of it more so like it's the shortest voicemail message ever, and you have to say all the stuff before it beeps and cuts you off.
You have like 3 seconds for the voicemail, and that's it. Yeah, It's kind of it. Good story. Thank you for sharing that experience with us. We do great that, and you'll love being an EPP. When you sign up there at ghostpodcast.com. If you like our show, help keep us on the air. Sign up to be one yourself at ghostpodcast.com. Get all those bonus episodes all year long is where they go. We're up to more than 100 and like 1,200, 1,300, 1,400, 1,500, somewhere in that area right now. The EPP bonus episodes, of course, all the stuff that fell off of iTunes up there as well. So there's like 400 some episodes to binge away on at ghostpodcast.com. Check it out. That $5 a month is... what keeps us on the air. So check it out, ghostpodcast.com. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.